Okay. What we're doing is we're having a conversation, and it's being recorded. This I've turned it on, but this will be subtracted. And then we'll create a disc. We'll give you back the disc. You can listen to it. If there's anything that you thought you might want to take out or what have you, you just tell us what it is, and we'll remove it. And then we throw it up on the Amador County Historical Society website, and it'll be there. And we put a copy in the county archives. So, then if you think of something that you wanted to add to it, or another stories or tales or information, etc., you know, we're more than happy to
do that.
Part two,
I've
done a couple of part twos.
I've often said I should carry one of these because I never think about what to talk about until somebody asks. And when Castle Oaks first got started, the ladies always invited me to all their luncheons because any questions they had, I could answer for them. And it was kind of fun. And every time I'd do something, I'd say, I should write that down or record it, you know.
Well, these are relatively inexpensive. I think that's like $59, and it's got 25 or 30, 34 hours, 32 hours and 41 minutes left on this.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's got six different files, so you can, you know, move it from one file to the next. That's what I was playing with earlier. Anyway, I need to read a thing into the thing. It's 11 a.m. on Friday. The calendar date's May 17th, 2013. And on this tape, you will hear the voice of Dolores Larrigan. And occasionally the voice of myself, Keith Sweet. We are taping this at the D-Bar-D Ranch in Ione. Dolores, thank you for participating in Amador County's Living History Project. We appreciate your willingness to preserve our county's history by sharing memories. This conversation is being tape recorded, and the tapes will be made available to the public without charge. If you share something during the next hour you regret saying on tape, we will make every effort to remove it before publication. Okay, having gotten that out of the way.
Yeah.
In general, we usually start by asking how long your family has been in Amador County and identify your history here with names and possibly dates, bringing us up to yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, my folks actually moved to Ione in 1936, and they came from Nebraska. And strangely enough, they followed apples out here. My dad picked apples all the way out, and I always thought of apples being in Washington, a little in Oregon. But from Nebraska, that was what he looked for, and would get a job, and then he'd move on. And anyway, they got here in about 1936 when Ione still had dirt streets.
Let's identify they.
Oh, my parents. So it was my mom and dad, Floyd Lair, known as Bud, and my mom, Frances, and they had two daughters, Georgiana and Neva. And so they moved to Ione in 1936, and then my brother was born in 1937, my brother Paul. And my mom went back to Nebraska to have him. I guess that was kind of the thing back then, was a lot of daughters went home to have their baby and came back. And even though she was only there about a week, he could never be a native son. And he wanted to be a native son in the worst way. He belonged to the Kiwatas and the Lions and the Grange. In fact, he went on to be national officers in the National Grange. And anyway, so then my brother was born in 37, and then during the war, my folks went to San Francisco, and my dad worked in the shipyards down there. So I was born during the war in 1943, and so we moved back to Ione when I was three or four, and my dad bought the old blacksmith shop in Ione and tore it down and built the building that I have now, which is Bud's, and right now Christy Roots Insurance is in the building. And I have pictures of him tearing it down and building it up. And I was only three. It might have been four by the time we started tearing down the building. But I remember my job. My dad would tear the boards off of the building and take all the nails out, and my job was to drag that board over to my brother, who would stack it. And he used a lot of the wood from the building that he tore down to build the building that we have now. And it's really neat. My dad loved to take pictures. Pictures was his thing. And when he, and hunting, he was a real hunter, and my mom was a fisherman. But my mom would go hunting with him, but she'd carry a camera. So in all the pictures that we have a lot of hunting pictures, which are kind of boring to other people, but we love them. So when my dad passed away, my son and I took on a project of taking his pictures in and having them put on discs. So far we've spent $5,000 on getting these put on discs, and we still don't have them all done.
Are they in order from?
They're not really in any order. That's the bad thing. I've kind of gone through them and written down things on all of them, and I haven't even gone through all of them yet. My son has. And so we'll go out to his place at night and go through the pictures and laugh at all the different times and things. But he took pictures of everything. He's got a picture of the women's club burning down in Ione. He's got just pictures of Party Dam when they opened it, and I have a picture of me standing on one of the light poles out there when I was probably about 4 or 5 years old. However, I don't know what year it was that they did that. He was fascinated by Party Dam.
Did your dad have favorite stories to tell about his arrival in Ione?
Well, he has a picture that he claims is him where it's all stacked with stuff on this one old Model T or Model A, whatever it was. And he was a storyteller. I mean, it was kind of like Cedric Clute. You could just sit and listen to him for hours. And he had a story about everything. But I can't just recall one about when he was moving here. But
no, he built a business building and then had a business in the building.
Right. When he first opened the building, it was a pool hall. So he had a little beer bar and a pool hall. And he put a wall up in the back, and we lived in the back. There was 3 bedrooms and a living room, and he had a shop area, and then, of course, the kitchen and the bathrooms. And after a few years, he realized that the long hours, the later hours, wouldn't be good for their health. So he was a carpenter by trade, so he changed it into building materials and stuff that he could use when he was working out. And he had a lot of garden supplies and stuff. Some of the pictures shows wheelbarrows and different things. And then as I got older and he was there longer, hunting and fishing was his real love, and taking pictures. So he changed it into hunting and fishing supplies. And I remember that more than I remember the building materials. He went as Bud's Building Supplies for a long time, and then Bud's Sports Center. But I really remember the hunting and fishing. He had the guns, and he had fishing licenses. And a kind of a funny story is, one year, he never ran out of fishing license and hunting licenses. And sometimes you never got hit real heavy till the day before season, right? And he was running low on forms, so he ran down to Sacramento to get more fishing license, hunting license. And they said, well, he couldn't get any more until he brought in what he already had. And he got so mad. He said, I've been doing business with you since 1947. I've never been late a day. I've never been a dime short. And you're going to tell me I have to run all the way home and fill out all these forms and bring them back before I can get more licenses? We're the only store in the state of California that has no limit on how many licenses we can have at one time, because everyone else is limited and they have to pay for these before they can get more.
Was there a reason for that?
Well, the reason was because he got so mad at him for telling him that he couldn't have more that they made him an unlimited supply.
What kind of competition did your dad's store have in the county?
Well, actually, there was no competition. I mean, we never had a Walmart or anything like that. I think every kid in Ione bought their first gun from my dad. And he'd sell it to them for a dollar down, a dollar whenever. And then eventually he even built a corner where they could come do their own shells, and for shotgun shells and bullets. And he'd teach them how to do it, and then he'd let them use all the equipment. And, yep, the kids in this town all loved him. He just, and he trusted everybody.
So the business was operated essentially on the clientele, local clientele? Or
all local clientele.
Out of Ione.
Out of Ione.
And surrounding.
Actually, the year that I graduated, 1960, my mom said that my dad had the best year ever, and he made $2,400. But my mom could make a dime go 12 ways. I mean, she made all of our clothes. She cooked from scratch, you know, so it just didn't take us that much to live on. And then, of course, when I was 8 years old, I got a horse, which probably cost them a little too. And I started working when I was in the fifth grade at the theater in town to pay for feed for my horse. And I always laugh and tell people, you know, smoking is a habit I never had to give up because I never could afford it because I had a horse to raise. Thank you, God.
you mentioned theater. The name of the theater would have been?
It was just the Ione Theater. And what picture were we looking at the other day that it... Oh, I have it here. One second. It doesn't have a picture of the theater, but it has... almost has it. And my girlfriend at the alumni dinner the other night, she brought me this picture. And this is me on a thoroughbred that I got when I was 14. And this was in 1960 at the homecoming parade. And this is the theater right here. And you can see where they had the things that were posted for that were showing would have been in those frames. And this is the Vims Club, which is now Tilly's. And when I was a kid, it was only half as big as it is now because we had an Owl's Drug next door to it. But it's pretty interesting, all the... And then, like I say, my dad has a picture of every parade. And that's one of the things that Andrea was working on because Thursday before homecoming, she
Andrea
had...
Bonham.
Mm-hmm, Andrea Bonham. She, my son gave her 11 CDs. From my dad's stuff. So she's been going through it, collecting parades, because she wanted to put on a presentation before homecoming. I didn't get to go see it, because it was the night of Father Ellihan's 90th birthday. So she's supposed to do it again. So I'm anxious to see what she's taken out of there.
You mentioned the homecoming parade. When did those start?
Well, this is our 137th parade. And it was my 67th parade. I've never missed one.
So your first parade would have been in?
Well, I was three, so 46.
Now, you didn't ride a horse when you...
Nope, I rode a tricycle my first year, and then I rode a bicycle for 2 years. And I can still remember my... I don't remember the tricycle. I remember it only because of pictures. But I remember the bicycle because I helped my mom string the yellow and white paper through the tires and everything. So, yep. And they used to have a pet parade besides the Ione Homecoming Parade in the summer. And I remember one year my mare, I got my mare when she was two, I was eight. And we bought her at an auction in Galt. And I started riding her home because we didn't even take a horse trailer down because my dad said, we're not buying a horse. We're just going down to check the prices. So he had me start riding her home, and he came in and came back to town and got a hold of Mr. Mace. Let's see, which Mace would it have been? Wasn't Gene. Anyway, he had a one-horse trailer, and my dad borrowed it from him and came down and met me on the road and picked me up. And it must have taken us an hour and a half to get that horse in a trailer. Her neck was stretched out the whole length of the trailer, and she still wouldn't put a foot in. And finally she did, and we got her home. My brother laughs about that all the time.
Now, you had to board the house, or because you were living in the city?
I was, and I had my horse was in every yard in Ione, I think, at one time or another. If somebody had tall grass in the backyard, I'd take a rope out there and tie her in it. And so I only had her 9 months when she had a cold. Well, the the kids that we bought her from said that they had two horses, and their dad said they could keep the Pinto as long as they could in the city. And since the colt turned out to be a Pinto, we think he was a little stud colt, and they had no idea she was even bred. She was only a two-year-old. So then after I broke him to ride, my dad rode in all the parades with me. And then I sold him not too long after that. My mom and dad never complained about things. They never said things over and over, you know. But if I had a boyfriend that they didn't really like, they'd tell me once, and then it was up to me after that. Well, he came to me one day and told me, he says, you know, we really can't afford two horses. Would you consider selling Prince? And I said, sure. So we kind of put feelers out. We had two little girls from Lockford come up and look at him, and then they left. And there was a guy named Romy that used to work on the grant, and he wanted my horse, and I didn't like him. I thought he was very mean to horses, and I just never did like him. And he gave me a check, and he said, take this to your dad. Your dad will take this from me. And I said, my dad will not make me sell my colt to you if I don't want to. So I did. I took the check and took it to my dad, and he said, nope, if you don't want him to have your horse, you don't have to sell it to him. So I took his check back, tore it up in front of him. And so it ended up that these two little girls in Lockford bought my colt. And I didn't lose a horse. I gained a family. I'd take my horse down to Lockford, and I would spend time with them on every vacation and everything. And I'd work with their kids on riding the horse that they bought from me. I showed him at Cow Palace at the national finals 4 different years after I sold him. And I'd bring him home for a couple weeks or a month before a big event. Or if I was going to a horse show in Stockton, I'd stop and pick him up, take him to the horse show. And they'd say, I can't get him to back up really good. Work on his backing up. And he'd run backwards in the arena. And he was just the perfect horse, except he was 68 pounds when he was born. My mom sent out birth announcements. And when he was born, I did everything wrong. I played tag with him, and when he got to be 1,250 pounds, he still wanted to play tag. And I let him bite on the hoe handle and the brush, and so I taught him to bite. And anybody could ride him. If you were 4 years old, you could have ridden him. He was the perfect horse when you were on him. But if you walked through the field he was in, you carried a 2x4 with you because he wanted to play. But it wasn't his fault. And now I've a stallion. I've had 6 stallions, actually. And I tell everybody that has a colt all the things you don't do with a colt, because colts are extremely smart, extremely smart. They learn 2 times. You do something with them, they learn it. So if you do it wrong, they learn it just as fast as if you're doing something right.
Now, have you broken and trained all of your own
horses? All of my own horses, yep.
Have you done that for other horses as well?
Very seldom, but once in a while I have. I had a guy from Valley Springs years ago. He brought in this beautiful black horse. My dad loved him. In fact, I even have a picture of my dad on him. He just was a huge horse, but beautiful. But everybody that trained him let him get away with stuff. So you'd be riding him down the road, and he'd just walk on his hind legs down the road about 10 foot. And nobody could break him of it. So, and my dad, every time I got a new horse in to ride for somebody else, he would take pictures. I said, are you taking those to see if you get me dumped? I never was, thank you, God. But I've had some real experiences with other people's horses. And as a kid, you know, I like to ride anything. If it had 4 legs, I'd give it a ride. Well, my girlfriend, when I sold this horse to my friends in Lockford, we used to ride down Lock Street, which is right along the railroad tracks in Lockford. Then a little girl used to come out and watch us. And I noticed she had a little horse running around in this corral behind her like crazy. And so we got to talking, and she had this horse, but she was afraid of it. And it was half Arabian and half Welch. It was a pretty little horse. And so she started riding with us, and she rode my mare, and I'd ride hers. And then I brought it home for a month, and then she never did have a problem with it again. It was a nice little horse. In fact, I have a picture of her in Ion Parade in front of Schmidt's old saddle shop. And then her mother worked for a lawyer in Stockton, and he never sold a horse that he quit racing. He always gave it to some kid that couldn't afford a horse of that quality. So he had a big red horse they called Stolen Boy. And the reason they called him that was because he was actually stolen before they had the brand on him or anything, when he was still just a colt and they hadn't even named him yet. Well, when they started running him, the jockeys always name different horses. You know, they have their own special name for each horse. Well, his name was Sleepy because he had the breeding and the ability to win races, but he never would win. He'd tie for first, he'd come in second, he'd come in third. So they always said he just slept going down the straightaway. And so she asked me if I'd go down and ride him, because some thoroughbreds can be made into kids' horses and some can't. So I went down to this ranch. He had an asparagus ranch, asparagus and walnuts, outside of Stockton, and his name was Lawrence, and he was a lawyer, Edward, I think. Anyway, he saddled up the Stolen Boy, and I rode him, and he was a great big, gentle, really nice horse. And so while we were there, he asked me if I'd like to ride this little black he had. Well, when we drove in, I saw this black horse in the back corral, and I thought it was a filly, but it was a little gelding. And I said, sure. Well, it took him about 45 minutes to get him saddled, cross-tied in a box stall, and I'd never ridden with a snaffle bit. So I didn't feel like I had a lot of control, but I did talk him into putting my Western saddle on him instead of the little stamp he was going to put on him. And I'm loping him down through the asparagus, and I never felt so much power under me in my life. I mean, and he would come up in a lope and kind of stay in the air for a minute and then come down. He had the neatest lope, but he had this power that was unbelievable. And so I was 14, and this lawyer took a liking to me right off the bat. And he said, you can have this horse if you'd like it. He said, I paid $10,000 for him as a yearling colt, and this is in the 50s. And he said, but I have three horses bringing in money right now, and I don't really need him. He said he pulled the tendon on his front leg, and I've had three vets look at him, and they all say that that leg's better than the other one. So I took him, I asked my dad, I said, well, I don't know, because my dad just asked me to sell a horse because I couldn't afford two horses. So my dad was always very protective. He was always afraid people would tell you things that would hurt you, and he told me, he says, nobody gives a horse of that quality away. He says, but I tell you what, we're going to pick up Lillian's horse, and we have a two-horse trailer. He says, if he loads that horse in, you can have it. And he did. And that's this horse that I have in the picture.
And in the parade, that parade is what year?
This was 60. Okay. And my mare was just a Heinz variety mare. We paid $77.50 for her at the Gold auction, and she was the second highest priced horse that sold. A registered quarter horse sold for $125 that day. And my dad would have probably never paid that much except the kid let me ride her. And so I was really hooked on this little red horse.
Now, were these horses both boarded in town?
Just in town. My dad did have half an acre down on Marlette, and my uncle had bought a half an acre right beside it. So we had that fenced, and that was actually the only field that we owned in town. But I kept them ever. My dad would put a fence around anything if they'd let me put her in. And there's a.
How much competition did you have with other horse owners?
No, I didn't have much. My cousin actually got her horse, Betty Lou Yarrington Burgess. She got her horse the day before I got mine. And she's always claimed that that's the reason I got a horse was because she did. And she had property on her place. She lived on Preston Avenue in a huge house that's still there. But they owned all the land behind it at that time. And now a housing project has moved in back there years and years ago. But I was about the only one, and when my mare had her colt, I would stake her out on a long chain, and I could hook his chain halfway down hers so he could nurse anytime he needed to. So you could never get him tangled up. Nothing ever bothered him around his legs or anything. He just, he never got in a bind because he'd been tied up since he was just a baby. In fact, my dad told me that I could not ride my mare until my colt could lead. So I had him leading at 5 days old.
So you rode your horses around town, I'm sure.
All around town. We rode out. Nothing was locked back then. So out where the plant is now, it was Gladdy McBean and Company and Interpace when I was a kid. And I could ride clear.
Which plant are you referring to?
Well, it's the one that's out towards Stockton. And when I was in high school, I wrote a speech on the plants around I own. The Rebecca's and the Odd Fellows had a speech contest that they'd give you a topic. And the topic the year that I did it was my community and foreign affairs. Most everybody that did the speech did it on how world affairs affected their community, and I did it on how my community affected world affairs. And Mr. David Wood was our teacher, who was an exceptional teacher. He just passed away last year. Anyway, he helped everybody. He's the one that helped us find scholarships. He helped us with what we wanted to go into.
What did he teach?
He taught English, and he actually knew like six languages. And if you wanted to learn a language, he'd teach one person. But English was his biggest thing. And if he couldn't teach you English, you couldn't learn it, because he just had a way of teaching you how to pronounce words and what words were used in a sentence and how they were wrong. And
what year did you graduate from high school?
1960.
How many were in your graduating class?
38. And we were one of the largest classes.
When did Ione High School close?
1984. I think 1983 was the last graduating class. And my son was the first senior class that went to Jackson.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I was really against the unification because I've always felt that, you know, the different schools had different sports and stuff that the kids could be in and gave more kids a chance. But the teachers were excited about it, and I thought if they were excited, they would know more than I was. And I went to all the meetings and everything. I have a really good story on that, too.
Well,
a couple of them. But then I found out that a lot of the teachers were really interested because of the raise in pay. But I felt that Argonaut got a lot of our really good teachers. We had some wonderful teachers. And it's all worked out over the years. I'm glad that the class that was the first graduating class was a strong class, because they had a real tough time that first year. Jackson seemed to have the idea that they were saving Ione. And I really feel that if they could have afforded it, they would have built a separate school, maybe on the hill by what we call Hurricane Hill, as you're going from Ione into Jackson, and make one bigger school. But Jackson had a newer facility up there, and they had the room. And I mean, I know they did a lot of work on figuring out what needed to be done and what they thought they had to do. And I don't know, I like the little schools. I was raised in a little school, and I loved every day of it.
One of the other people that I talked to said that one of the biggest things that happened when the school moved was that Ione lost a kind of a sense of community. Because so many things centered around school activities, and because it was small, most parents participated.
Right, everybody had to. And even in both Daryl and Buford both went to Jackson, and they had to play every sport in order to get enough kids in it to make that sport happen. And so there was a lot of community activity. And I remember when we voted to put the pool in, oh, my dad was so upset. He just thought that was such a waste of time, and I thought it was the greatest thing that ever happened in our little town. And it gave our kids something to do in the summer. But, you know, even as a kid, we had summer activities. I have things that I made in ceramics that when I couldn't hardly reach the table, and they had little classes that taught us how to play the flute and lots of different things. There was a lot of activities, and I've always said that if you're bored in Amador County, you want to be, because there is something going on in this county all the time. My son went to a prom in Pleasanton when he was a junior or senior, and he'd really never been out of Ione that much, and I thought, oh man, he's going to get down there and all the lights and everything, and who knows how that's going to affect him. So he went down there, and they had cost $85 for the dinner at prom each, and they served shish kebab, which was what, 4 pieces of meat for these 17, 18 year old kids. Well, of course, everybody was starved when they got done, and their rules were just like ours here. Once you went into the prom, you couldn't leave. And so he called up and had pizza delivered. I said, leave it to my son. So he comes home, and I said, well, Mike, what did you think about all of that glitter and glitz down there? And he said, Mom, he said, you can't do anything down there that don't cost at least $20. He said, I told them kids if they wanted to have a good time, they needed to come to Amador County, and it wouldn't cost them nothing. They said, well, what do you do? And he says, well, I don't know, but I haven't had time to think about it for the last 10 years.
What year did he go to the prom?
I think it was 83 or 84. He was either a junior or a senior.
Was it Amador Valley High School or Foothill High School?
In Pleasanton? I have no idea.
The only reason I ask, and I really shouldn't be sticking my nose in this.
Sure, you should.
I was the vice principal at Foothill High School.
Is that right?
1983. So.
Well, now I'll have to ask him.
And much of Pleasanton thought of themselves as a country town. You know.
Well, and they had it at a big hotel somewhere there. It wasn't at the school, but it was funny. I don't know, but I haven't had time to think about it for the last...
You were going to tell a couple stories about unification, didn't you?
Well, you know, when we had a lot of talks, and I really was there to do what I thought my kids wanted to do. I mean, I was backing them as far as I was concerned. And so at one of our meetings... they had all the people from Jackson talk first on what we should do. And, of course, we were talking about changing the mascot, changing the colors, changing the name, and what was all, just what was going to happen. And so every one of them got up and talked, and we took notes on what they were saying. And so when it was our turn to talk, we had a rebuttal for most everything that they had brought up. And one of the gentlemen started to butt in, and and I was pretty quiet until after I married Buford. And I said, you know, I'm talking, and we didn't interrupt you when you were talking, and you have no right to interrupt us while we're talking. So you can just go right back over there and sit down and shut up. And then my son gave up because they really were arguing about the different things. Well, the band had just bought new uniforms, which are very expensive, and their colors were green and white, and Ion's colors were red and black. And so it became obvious that we need to leave the colors because of the price of the band uniforms. So anyway, we're all arguing, and my son, who I'd never heard say 20 words until he got to be about 15, got up and said, you know, you guys are right. You're absolutely right. And everybody got quiet. He said, we shouldn't change the color, we shouldn't change the mascot, and we shouldn't change the name. And since Ion High was the first school in the county, it ought to be Ion High, red and black, and the Mustangs. So that didn't go over very well. Somebody suggested that maybe we should make our colors black and white and call ourselves the Skunks. And
now, were these just parents talking, or was this school administration?
Mostly parents. This was a meeting among the parents. Everybody was there. But it was just kind of ideas being thrown out as to what could be done. So they ended up, of course, like you know, we changed the name, we kept Jackson's colors, and we took Ion's mascot. So it made it all. They were really trying to blend it together, but a lot of people didn't want it to be blended together. They just wanted it to stay the same. Well, we did too, but.
And the real purpose, of course, was to bring two smaller schools together to make a larger school.
One larger school, and less, you know, the teachers would be combined, so in the long run it might be less to run it as a big school than as two little schools, and there was a lot of thought put into it.
Bringing it up to today, do you have any thoughts on the potential unification of the two current high schools?
I heard somebody talking about that the other day, too. I still feel that two schools are better than one. I just think that you got the competition, you got the extra sports that you can get in, and knowing our family, you know, sports is a big thing to it. And you know, if 10 kids can be the top 5 on a team instead of 5 kids, you've got that many more kids that excel in that sport. And I know the bigger schools do it, and the better kids play, but.
To change the subject a little bit, when your father built what is now Bud's on the corner there, the corner of the, which two streets?
Actually, it's not on the corner. It's a half a block off of Main Street on Buena Vista Street.
That's right.
South Buena Vista.
And you were 3, that you had the walk of the town or the run of the town, so to speak. Dirt roads at that time, as I recall you saying.
Well, in 36 there were dirt roads. I'm not sure if in 47 when we moved back, if that was 46 and 47, if they were finally paved.
I'm anxious
to look into some of the pictures because my son said that he found some where the roads were still dirt.
Over that time, what would you say were the major changes in downtown Main Street, Ion?
Well, we had 4 grocery stores, and let's see, at least 2 bars, and at one time we had 3. We had 4 grocery stores right on Main Street, and we had Gillum's Drug that was down just past, just would be east of the city where City Hall is now. And, of course, where City Hall is now was Bank of America. And we had Schmidt Saddlery on the corner. And in some of our old pictures, there's a big building that's right by our bridge, as you head over the bridge. excuse me. And at one time, it was Smiley and Anzarello's, and they sold Pontiac cars, and they had a gas station there and a garage. And at one time in the pictures, that building comes right up to the road, for now it sits back enough for parking. And somebody was telling me yesterday, or maybe it was during our alumni dinner at homecoming, that they remember them tearing that part back. I don't remember that.
Do you remember the roller skating?
Oh, yes. We spent our life in the roller skating rink. And the day that it burnt, my dad was on the fire department, and he wanted to go in and put it out because they had a big pot-bellied stove. And instead of coming in early in the morning and getting a fire started, after they got there later in the evening, they would start stroking that fire. And by the time they'd leave is when it really started going. So he knew that that's what happened. They had been in there that night before, you know, that night. And so when the fire burnt out, he knew it was the pot-bellied stove, and they wouldn't let him go in. So he went home and got his camera and took pictures of it burning to the ground. And then one of the firemen broke a hole in the ceiling, and then it just went up. We had Jig's dinners there. We had proms there. We played baseball. They had donkey basketball there. They played basketball there, not baseball. but they had everything in that building. It was a huge building.
So how did that change the character of the community when it burned down then?
Well, of course, it was a big, big part of the community. And we always dreamed they'd put it back, but they never did. Now, we did have another building that's where Bank of Amador, which is now American River Bank, is. That there was a building in there that was a long, wasn't really narrow because it was a pretty good sized building. It went from the hotel in there over to Schmidt's Saddlery. And it was a big building too that was open. And the Indians used to have a lot of bingo in there. I'd go up and play bingo at night. My mom would give me a dollar or whatever. It was 10 cents a game or something. And, We started Jump Night there, which was a group of people in Ione started a dance for teenagers on Wednesday night during the summers, and they called it Jump Night. And so it was a get together for people to get together for that night. And so we had that building, and then we had a building up at Preston that was kind of a clubhouse that they'd let people use too. And I think it's still there, but now with the closure of Preston, it'll probably get torn down. But I had my first birthday party there when I was 11 in that building, and my mom made me a cake with a horse on it, of course. And I remember one of my girlfriends gave me underwear, and I had two boys at my birthday party. I was so embarrassed. Could not believe, and they were the cutest underwear ever. They had a year, every day of the week on them. But when I opened them up and held them up, I just died. It was like, who would do that to an 11-year-old girl?
Has the Ione homecoming changed at all over the years?
Well, you've got it. It's got to change when there's no horse racing. Horse racing was the thing. I mean, everybody was there for the racing. And I heard a rumor the other night that there might be a group that might try to bring that back.
Now, the horse racing was done at Howard Park?
At Howard Park. We have the first mile track on the West Coast. And somebody said at one time that it was the first mile track west of the Mississippi. So it is I rode every day out there. My girlfriend and I, we used to race a quarter mile every night before we'd come home. So some friends of ours, or we were reading books one day, and somebody said, one of them said that a horse doesn't like to do the same thing over and over. Well, we never did the same thing over and over because we rode all over Amador County. But we were thinking that this race might be something maybe they don't want to do it. So we decided that one night we wouldn't race them. We just bring him home. Well, normally we'd run our quarter mile race, and by the time we walked back into town and they were all cooled off and we could brush them down and turn them out. Well, that night they were anticipating that race all the way home. They were lathered up wanting to go. It took us, we walked them until about 11 o'clock at night to get them cool enough that we thought we could turn them loose in the field. And probably wouldn't have mattered because it wasn't a cold, weathery night. But anyway, we decided that they liked it as much as we did. We weren't going to not race any other night. And we used to play Pony Express out there. We'd jump off and pretend we grabbed a bag of something and jump back on and take off. And one of my little girlfriends, Kay Mills, was riding behind me one time, and I jumped off, and she was on the back of the saddle, and I put my leg over in front of her, and our saddle came off, and she came off, and I came off, and my mare took off, and she goes a little ways and turns around and comes back like, well, now what are we going to do?
Well, tell me a little bit about the horse racing. What do you remember when that started and when it ended?
Well, I know that when I got my horse, they'd been doing it. In fact, Yeager's in town, they had a horse they called the Old Gray Mare, and I guess she was about the hardest horse to beat around here. So when I got my mare and started running, they weren't running the Old Gray Mare anymore because I don't think my mare was ever beat on our racetrack out here. And then when I got this thoroughbred, he would leave her 4, 5, 6, 8 horse lengths behind. I mean, he was that much faster. Sometimes when I would race him, I would be turned around coming back before the next horse went across the finish line.
So the racing, was that just local racing, or was that people come from around the state race, or out of state to race?
I didn't know of anybody out of state, because now, you know, they did have the racetrack in the 1800s, and they had a great big, we've got a picture of double-story seating that is packed. So, and it was the big thing. It was supposed to be a really unique track because they were supposed to have put wood under it, and which made it more elastic for the horses. And, of course, when we were running, it was clay and harder than Hades. And if it wasn't for the Bonham brothers, that every year at homecoming, they would work on the track and the arena for us to make it good for that day. And then it would go most of the year without being worked on again. And the back of the track would get in real bad shape because the water ran off the road onto it. But every year they'd fix it up for us. We'd call
it. So during homecoming week, then there would be local folk racing one another at the track.
Right. And there was a lot of people that came from Galt, the Galt area. They had a racetrack down there. They even brought up racehorses and jockeys at different times and raced against us. And, in fact, we used to only meet, homecoming used to only be on Sunday. And years ago, they came to my dad and asked him if we would put on a Gymkhana horse show, because that's what I did. Gymkhana is timed events on horseback. And they asked us if we would put on the horse show, a Gymkhana horse show on Saturday, because we could never get a contract for the carnival. And sometimes they would call us 2 days before homecoming and say they got a better deal, so they canceled us. But they said if we'd get a 2-day event going, that they would give us a contract, and they couldn't do that. The carnival people. So we did. My dad and I, for 25 years, we put on a Gymkhana horse show out there, and we had 4 races. We had a men's race, a woman's race, a kid's race, and a free-for-all. And so the year that I got Caligari, my thoroughbred horse, I was 14. And I had one of the Yeager boys rode, I had him come out and ride him. Well, when he rode the Old Gray Mare, or their family did, they would start going sideways because a quarter horse can start sideways. And when you say go, swing around, and he felt that gave him a lead. Well, he wanted to do that with my thoroughbred, who had never done anything but start out of a starting gate. And so he ran in the men's race, and he lost to a black horse by about an inch. And so I won the ladies' race, and then in the kids' race, the junior race, as I was coming around the first corner, my saddle was loose. And my dad lectured me my whole life on, you know, you never look back when they're running, you never do anything dumb because you can break a leg on them really easy. So he didn't have much of a mane, but I gathered up his mane and I'm trying to hold the saddle on him. And by the time we got into the corner, he could tell that something was wrong and he started moving into the middle of the track. Now, hi, Donnie.
How is it?
And come on in. And so I gathered up his mane and I had the saddle on him. And it was really loose. And so I straightened it back up on him and I got it on too far the other way. And by this time we're coming out of the corner. My brother's taking pictures and he sees me having a problem and quits taking them, or he'd had a picture of the whole thing. So then as he's coming out of the corner, now he's moved over to the outside of the track, is where all the people are. I got a real grip on his mane, and I jumped off, and the saddle came off, and I hit the track and jumped back on him, but I landed on his neck instead of on his back. So here I am. I've got all my weight on his neck. He's got the saddle underneath him. He has no idea what's going on, and now he's into a kind of a lope instead of a run, a good hefty lope, gallop. And so just as we get in front of the people, I slide down his neck and hit the deck, and about five of my friends took off on the horses to go down and catch him at the other end of the track. And where the track turned, he didn't, and he hit the road that went into the old brickyard, and he went down. And he laid there until they came and helped him up. So here I am walking him around trying to see if he's hurt. I'm wanting to race this black horse that's won races for 8 years out there, you know, and everybody bets on him, and they've all lost a lot of money on this other black, and I really wanted to see if he could run faster if he was pushed, because I'd never had him against anything that pushed him. And okay. And so here I am, I'm debating because I really want to race this black in the free-for-all race, but I don't know how hurt he is from all this that he's gone through. So we're leading him around. Well, we didn't have to make the decision because he loaded his horse up and hauled it away because he knew he'd have to make bets with all these guys he had all those years, and he wasn't sure he could beat this little black horse. And his horse looked so much like my Caligari that the guy that gave him to me came up that day to watch him race. And he thought that the other black horse was his, was Caligari. But
You mentioned betting. This betting was all informal betting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we used to sell raffle tickets. We had 50 prizes. We were in charge for a few years of doing all the raffle. And we'd go around, and I told everybody, I can only get raffle prizes for one thing, because I don't want people to hate to see me come in their store because I won another raffle prize. So I gave them all up except this one. And we could sell tickets up and down there. Every time you went up and down the track, everybody'd buy tickets. So you sold those. And, of course, the beer sales were always up because they were standing around waiting for the races to start. But those were the good days.
So that's how the parade, that's how the homecoming has changed.
Oh, man.
By the loss of the racing events.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the amount of people that come out, I mean, you couldn't, they were 10 deep standing along the racetrack waiting for the races. And so we had four races on Saturday, and then another group did a horse show on Sunday, and then they had three or four races on Sunday too.
how about what was the impact of Preston on the IOM community?
Oh man, it was a big Preston closing is a big thing. You know, it not only employed a lot of people and it was jobs that were good jobs too. I mean, they were high paying jobs and there's several things on that. You know, it's a building. It has everything out there. It has a hospital. It had all the facilities to do all the cooking and everything. Plus, they taught everybody a trade. You know, they had a masonry class where they would teach them how to do masonry. They'd teach them car repairs. We said, does that include stealing cars? They had a printing place out there that taught them how to print posters and stationery and cards and anything you wanted. And all of these were trades that kids that were there could take on and maybe get a job sometime. The bad thing with kids that are in prison, and a lot of them have never had a job.
Right.
And a lot of their parents have never had a job. And so it did teach them a trade. And I remember as a kid, we used to go up, if somebody worked there, you could go up and watch movies, because they had a balcony. So my friend that mother worked there, she used to take us up and we'd get to see movies that we never got to see, you know, around. We did have a theater in town, but we didn't always get the top-rated movies like they did up there, or as many. Anyway, and then there was times when we got to even have a party at the pool up there. And
you know, I as a lot of folks think of Ion as being more agricultural based, but a lot of the downtown residential properties were actually homes for people who worked at the prison.
Right. In fact, it was always rents. It was always hard to find a home in Ion because of all of the land that wasn't owned by the state of California was owned by the Grant, which was the big cattle ranch. And so there wasn't a lot of room for building. And so it was always hard to find a rental in Ion. So rentals were a priority. You know, back when Preston started, they had a grade A dairy. And they raised the calves. You know, you have to keep the milk cows bred in order to keep the milk coming. And so they'd raise the calves, which would be their future milk cows. And they had a calf barn. It was beautiful. It was all brick. And the barn for milk was all brick. And everything in it was stainless steel. And they had a pig farm. They raised all their own pigs and meat. And they had, not only that, they had the vegetables and everything they grew there. And then they had the psychiatrist come in and say that they couldn't work these boys, even though it was an honor to work the farm because there was no tall fences out there. So they had to earn the right to even be on the farm or work the farm. And as we know now, it was really good for them. But they shut all that down and they let all those buildings just rot. It was so sad. Of course, now it's Castle Oaks. So.
Right. The as you drive around Ion or fly over Ion, you know, you see large, vacant, empty parcels of land. There were a lot of large ranches surrounding Ion.
The biggest ranch was the Grant. They owned most all of the land. There was the Q Ranch that was on the way to Sacramento. But I don't think it didn't even compare in size to the Grant. They owned property clear out the old Stockton Road, which was the old road to go to Stockton, and clear down Twin Cities Road. They just had a lot of land, and then the land on the...
You're talking about the Arroyo Seco land.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then Preston, of course, the state of California owned a lot of that land that's north.
Was cattle ranching a big thing around the Ion area, or?
Oh yeah, you know, Jackson Valley. In fact, Jackson Valley was noted for its Indians before there was even a town of Ion. They said that And so the where the Borth Ranch is now, kids had that when I was a kid, and they raised cattle, and all of that area along there, because the feed grows so well along that area. It was evidently the dirt and stuff out there is really good. They still raise hay and stuff out there. Waters
about,
Ranch is
how about
out there.
Along the Sutter Creek Ione Road. Are there any ranches in that area?
Yeah, there are. There still are. And then Josie's Ranch is right outside of town here. And
Bottom Gimpert Ranch is out on that in that direction.
Right? I think so. I don't know them. And then we have a we have somebody out there raising all kinds of different animals. They've got
well, you know the Bottoms and you know the Gimperts, but I think that was a I was talking to William Gimpert.
And there's the Ward Ranch that was there where there's that big pond on Sutter Creek Ione Road. But, yeah.
But agriculture and ranching were
what Ione was mostly noted for. And even in the old history book that Larry Sonato helped put out, it shows a lot of the old ranch houses and the ranches around. And everything was big then. You know, nobody had 7 acres. They all had 100 acres or more.
Well, we're going to... you have a lot more stories to tell, I know. and we'll probably have a Dolores Larrigan part two. But to kind of close, what's the relationship, in, from your perspective, between Ione and its citizens and other parts of the community, other parts of the county? Let's just take Jackson, for example.
Well, I think Ione kind of gets along with everybody. I think we have some areas in our county that have some little cliches, as you say, like in high school. But I don't think Ione's ever gotten into that. I think that their people are open and warm and really willing to get along with just about anything that goes on, as long as you don't step on their history.
Did people look forward in Ione to go? I mean, Jackson, for example, is kind of the center of the was the commercial center. So
sure.
Did when you were younger, did you look forward to a trip into Jackson as opposed to going into downtown Ione?
We liked to go to Jackson. Of course, as a kid, when we were dragging Maine, we'd go to Placerville and Jackson, and you never stayed home, you know. But let's see. But yeah, it's always been, you know, all the big thing when we were kids were dances. You know, your big entertainment was going someplace. Jenny Lynn had a big dance hall out there, and my folks used to go, and they'd take all us kids. And West Point, they were kind of known for all the fighting that went on around their dances. And River Pines had a big dance on Saturday night. And where the Elks Lodge is now is the Millmar, and a lot of local bands played there, and there was always a good night there. And even the bars that were out on North Main, the Wheel Inn and Biscaglia's, they all had a band, and that was the big entertainment. Was the dancing, especially after the skating rink burnt down, and they did do skating also at the Italian Picnic Grounds in that building.
Did they have dances in the Grange Hall?
Well, we never had a Grange Hall. We rent our hall. It's the Ione Memorial District Hall. And my dad tried really hard for years to talk a group into building a hall because he thought he could get one of the ranchers to donate land for it, but he could never get an interest to get a hall built. But we do still meet after we started in 1939. We still meet here in Ione.
Well, Dolores, thank you very much for talking with me.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it.
Good.